begin.
I say good morning. No worries. Let's begin by thanking all of our sponsors, our Talmud Torah sponsors, for the month of Adar Aleph. To thank Mrs. Salmol for dedicating all the Shem and Drashos this month, with immense gratitude for the refuos from Hashem and the merit of a refuah shlema for all of those in need, and the schus of our brave soldiers and the return of our hostages. The Schwarzbaum family, in memory of Rabbi Aaron Schwarzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir Zichrono Livracha, and the Ziv, Levine, and Berman families, in memory of William Ziv, Zev Shmuel Ben Yisrael, Zichrono Livracha. We will say we also dedicate all Maseches Baba Kama Le'ilui Nishmas, Master Sergeant Elio Michal Charush, Hashem Yikom Damo. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his Nisham will have an Aliyah, and the family Inachama. Well, so with that, let us begin. We have a lot to do today, Baruch Hashem. Today's daf is Kuf Yud Beis 112, and we are picking up on Kuf Yud Aleph 111b, and we are picking up at, I believe, Amalekha Rava. Is that correct? I was wrong before already once this week about where we were picking up. I think Amalekha Rava, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, about 17 lines up from the bottom. So just to reorient ourselves a little bit, remember again, we're in the midst of a dramatic machlokis over here between Rami Bar Chama and Rava. Now remember again, let's orient ourselves a little bit in the case that the Mishnah was talking about. The Mishnah spoke about a case of a guy, Reuven. Reuven stole an object, and Reuven left that object, died. Now the Shaila is, are his children obligated to go ahead and return that object after his death? Now what does that depend on? So we'll say, so remember again, in general, there are two things. When a person steals an object, there are two things required in order to transfer that object into a new domain. Number one, yeyush. Right? Number one, yeyush. Right? That the owner has to despair about retrieving it, because if there's no yeyush, then the object remains in the original owner's possession. And number two is shinui rishus, some type of change of domain. So the shaila is, when the child inherits the stolen object from his thief father, does the inheritor, does the child, essentially have the status of like a purchaser? Because a purchaser would satisfy both of those criteria. Ultimately, again, if it's Yeyosh and Shinui Rishus. So I will say, so does the inheritor child, essentially acquire the stolen object or not? The way the Gemara phrases that is the inheritor considered to be a purchaser, a lokeach? In which case, if there was Yeyosh, then ultimately, again, falling into the domain of the children would be a shinui rishus. The kids would acquire the object and therefore would not have an obligation to go ahead and return it. That's our machlokes that we saw in yesterday's daf. Rabbi Bar Chama said, rishus yoresh ki rishus lokeach tami. So Rabbi Bar Chama wanted to suggest that ultimately, again, when the children inherit the object, so they are considered to be like purchasers, therefore they acquire the object, and therefore halacha l'maisa, they have no obligation to go ahead and return it. I will say, now what that sounds like is, which is actually quite fascinating, they have no obligation to return it, even if what? Even if it's extant, right? Even if the object is right there. Conversely, Rava said that halacha l'maisa, rishus yoresh lav ki rishus lokeach tami. That ultimately, again, the domain of the child is not considered to be like the domain of a purchaser. And therefore, especially if the object is in existence, ultimately the child has the obligation to go ahead and return the object. Incredible. So, Amalekha Rava. So, Rava says as follows. Hachi Kamar. This is what the Mishnah means to say.
Amen.
So Rava says as follows. This is what the Mishnah means to say. Im hiniach lehem avim achrayis nechosim chayav l'shalim. So Rava says what the Mishnah means is as follows. So generally, again, we'll say, Rava would say like this. If we're talking about a situation of where the stolen object is still in existence, so according to Rava, what the Mishnah means to say is as follows. That if the father left behind real property, that there is an obligation upon the estate, upon the Yerushim, to go ahead and repay the stolen object. Now the logic behind that we're going to see in just a moment. But yet, Rebbe taught Rabbi Shimon his son, lo davar sheish bo achrayis mamish. It doesn't literally mean that the father, that the stolen object is real property. Ela afilu para v'choresh ba, Chamar o mechamer acharov lechayim chayiv lahachzer mepnei kavod aviyem. Now the Rabbi said, we know that the halacha is that if the father steals something and the object is extant when the father dies, the children have the obligation to return the object. Why? Why? Covered for their father. Now Rabbi said, this is not because they have an obligation of hashava. Right? The children don't really have an obligation to return stolen property. Why not? Why not? They didn't steal it, right? The obligation of Hashav, as we're going to discuss, of returning stolen property, really devolves upon the thief. They're not the thief. They didn't do anything. So why do the children have an obligation to return stolen property? It's covered for their father, right? It's not. It doesn't look right. When there is an object in existence that people may know was stolen, so they have to return it. Allah Amarava. So Rava said, this is beautiful. Allah Amarava. Rava said as follows. Kisha Chivna. So Rava says, you know, when I die, Raboshia Nafik Livasi Ditaritzna Masnisin Kavase. Raboshia, this is such a beautiful thing. Rava says, when I die, Raboshia is going to come out and greet me in Olam Haba. Why? Because I interpreted the Mishnah in accordance with his opinion. Oh, wow. Beautiful. Raboshia, so just by the way, if you think about that, perhaps what the Gemara is trying to teach us, what Rav is trying to teach us, is that when ultimately you use, when you use a teaching of Chazal to somehow improve your life, that gives an aliyah to the neshama of the person whose Torah you are learning, that boosts them maila maila, higher and higher. And perhaps there's hakara satov, this gratitude, that when you leave this world, the neshama of that great person will come to greet you, almost as a sign of gratitude for what you've done for them in the Olam Ha'emes, in the world to come. That was such a beautiful yisod. In general, there's this concept in Chassidus that when you learn the Torah of a tzaddik, so you connect with their neshama. There's a personal connection that you have with their neshama, right? We know this. So those of us who have the schos to learn the Torah of the Piagetzna every Thursday night, you see that there is a feeling like that, of connection with the Torah, with the neshama of a tzaddik. You feel a connection, even though someone's been gone for so many years. So Rava says, when I die, I know Rav Oshia is going to come out and he's going to greet me because I'm interpreting the Mishnah in accordance with his opinion. So incredible. So the Gemara says, why? What happened? The Tanya Rav Oshia, Hagozal Uma'achil Ezbanov. So let's listen to this. Ruvain steals an object. He goes ahead and uses the object. He feeds it to his kids. I will say, now again, I want to point out, like I said yesterday in the Mishnah, this isn't some kind of sob story that, right, that Reuven has no money. He's begging and stealing to go ahead and support his family. It's just a matter of fact. In other words, he stole. And it happens to be he used the theft to sustain his family. Peturim Milashalim. So I will say, so that's it. That's another way of saying the stolen object is no longer in existence. So now, if Reuven dies and the stolen object is no longer in existence, the children, right, the children, the heirs, have no obligation to return anything. Okay? So the Gemara says, Hiniach lifneihem gizela kayemes. If, however, the father died, and when the father died, the stolen object was still in existence. Whatever the object was, then what's the halacha? Chayavin. Then ultimately, again, they are obligated to go ahead and return the stolen object. Einach gizela kayemes. If, on the other hand, when the father died, the stolen object is not in existence, so Pturin, ultimately, again, they are not obligated to go ahead and return anything. Now watch this. Rav Oshia says, if the father left behind real property, then the children are obligated to repay the stolen object. Now Rav Oshia, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, by the way, there's a couple of things that are being introduced over here. So case number, there's a bunch of cases. Case number one, Reuven steals an object. Case number one is during Reuven's lifetime, the stolen object is consumed. So when he dies, nothing is left. Okay, in that case, halacha lemaisa, children have absolutely no obligation to go ahead and return the stolen object. Case two, hiniach lifneihem gzila kayemes chayavim. Reuven dies, stolen object is still in existence. Give it back. Case three, ein gzila kayemes. What happens, case three, Bosei, is when Reuven died, the object was in existence. The kids didn't know it was a stolen object, so what do? They consumed it. In that case, also no obligation to return it, because again, remember, there's never an obligation to be out of pocket for the estate. Case four, Reuven stole an object, and whatever it is, whether he went ahead, he consumed it, they consumed it, but Reuven is in possession of real property. In that case, Rav Oshia says the estate is obligated to make restitution to the victim. What's the logic behind that? See, I will say, the moment that you steal an object, what happens? What happens halachically? There is automatically triggered an obligation to repay that which you stole. So you have a debt, right? I'm a thief. Who do I have a debt to? Who do I have a debt to? The victim. The victim, right? That debt essentially creates a lien against real property. So now I will say, interestingly enough, essentially once Reuben dies, if Reuben has real property at the time that he stole, essentially, again, the victim of the theft becomes a creditor against the estate. So now even once he dies, there is a creditor against the estate. And again, the Yerushim do have an obligation, the estate has an obligation to pay off the debts of the now deceased father. So we'll say that's the pshat in the Mishnah when the Mishnah says, v'miniach lahem. Remember again, we didn't understand the statement. V'mhaya davar sheyishbo achrayis chayavan l'shalim. Right, when the Mishnah said, and if they had a real property, they're obligated to pay. So now Rava comes and explains this according to Rav Oshia. What that means is as follows. In general, if the stolen object is no longer in existence, whether it's because Reuben the thief consumed it or his kids consumed it, there is no obligation of repayment on the part of the children. Okay? If the stolen object is in existence, kids have to pay it back. However, the caveat to all of this is, if Reuben left behind real property, there's always an obligation for the estate to pay back the stolen object. Why? Because upon the theft, there's a lien created against the real property, and the estate must pay off the debts of the now deceased thief father. Incredible. So the Gemara says, Amar, Ein Agzil Kayam Es Pturin. What comes out from this is, if the stolen object is not in existence, the heirs are potter from paying back. So I will say, this would seem to refute the position of Rav Chista. Rav Chista would say, Kitanya hahi la'achar Yeyosh. When is this talking about? This is Dafka talking about after Yeyosh. Okay. Amar, Gzeda Kayam Es Chayav L'Shalim. But we'll say, what seems to come clear is, if the stolen object is in existence, the children are obligated to pay it back, to give it back. Does this not refute the position of Rami Bar Chama? Rami Bar Chama, Kitanya hahi, top of Kuf Yud Beis, lifnei Yeyosh. He would set up the case he's dealing with before Yeyosh. So I will say, the point over here is, Yeyosh is the swing factor in this, right? That piece is still kind of dangling around in this conversation. Top of 112b, Yud Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, Rav Ada Bar Ava Masti Lahad Drami Bar Chama, aha. So Rav Ada Bar Abba, he went ahead and he attached the statement to Rami Bar Chama in the Fals. And I remember again, what did Rami Bar Chama say? Rami Bar Chama wanted to say, Rishus Yoresh Ki Rishus Lokeach Domi. Right, that ultimately, again, when something comes into the domain of an inheritor, so essentially the inheritor acquires it. Assuming that we're talking about after Yeyosh, so assuming that it's La'achar Yeyosh, so the idea of coming into the domain of the inheritors is considered to be a Shinei Rishus. A change of domain. So that Yeyosh plus change of domain allows the inheritors, allows the kids, the Yorshim, to acquire the object. Okay, so Rav Ada Bar Ava, Masni V'Hadrayim Bar Chama Aho. So Rav Ada Bar Ava, he went ahead and he explained the statement to Rav Bar Chama in the following context. He niach lehen avihen ma'os shal ribis. So there's a lot of interesting cases over here. Let's say Reuven lent money with interest. Lent moving around money with interest. And Shimon paid, so Reuven lent Shimon $1,000. Shimon paid him back $1,200. Okay, now Reuven has that money in his account when he died. So we'll say, by the way, the halacha with interest is, remember, both parties are culpable. Both the lender and the borrower are both culpable for engaging in an interest transaction. That's number one. Number two, interest falls under the umbrella of theft. And therefore, even if you've already collected it, there is an obligation to go ahead and return it. So in this case over here, Reuven lent Shimon the money, right? $1,000. Shimon paid back Reuven $1,200. And $1,200 is sitting in Reuven's savings account when he dies. Okay. So niach lan avi emal shal ribis. Afapi shiyodin shen shal ribis. Ein chayav lahachzir. Interesting. See, even though now the kids know that this was ribis money, interest money, they are not obligated to go ahead and return it to Shimon. Rabbi Abraham says, Zosomeres, Rishus Yoresh Ki Rishus Lokeach Tami. So Rabbi Abraham says, what do you see from here? That that falling into that, when something is inherited by the children, by the Yerushim, that is tantamount to a shinui rishus, a change in domain. A change in domain. And again, assuming that that is coupled with Yeush, so therefore again, the children become the complete owners over the money. All right. So the Gemara says, Rava, Amar the Olam, Eim Lachar Rishus Yeush, Lach Yeushus, okay, Achdami. Rava says, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe when children inherit something that is not considered to be a Shinui Rishus. We'll say, remember again, we're trying to figure out over here, essentially, just so you appreciate the tension. We seem to see like conflicting ideas that on one hand, that children as inheritors almost inherit the position of the father, and whatever the father's status was, that's the kid's status. I'm talking about like from a monetary perspective. Or conversely, no, children essentially have the status almost of a purchaser. So that when they inherit property, that property is coming into a totally new domain, separate and distinct from anything to do with their father. And that's the tension we keep on seeing going back and forth over here. So Rava Amrava says, no. Liolam eim lecha, rushos yoresh lav ki rushos lokeach dami. So I'll say, you know what it almost feels like? It almost feels like sometimes, children, actually, you know, we'll save it for later. It's logged out. So Gemara says as follows. So Rava Amar the Olam Eim Lecha Rishus Yorish Lav Kirshus Lokeach Dami. Rava says that in reality, when children inherit something, so that inheritance, when they acquire it, it's not considered to be like a purchaser, like a new domain. Rather, it's considered to be like an extension of their father's domain. So what's happening over here? So Rava says, if that's the case, that it's not a Shinui Rishus, so Rava says, let's play this out. So therefore, Reuben lent Shimon $1,000. With ribbis. Reuben got back $1,200. The money is sitting in Reuben's savings account. Reuben dies. Children inherit the savings account. If you hold that Rishus Yoresh Lav Kirshus Lokeach Dami. See, if you hold that when children acquire something, they're not purchasers. They're an extension of their father. So what should they have to do with that money? Return it. So what? But yet, I will say that's not what the Braise said, right? The Braise said that they don't have to return it. So what's going on over here? V'shayni hacha. So this case is different. Ribbis is different. Why is Ribbis different? The Amar Kra, because the pasuk said, "Al tikach me'iton nashach v'tarbis ahadrele kihechi dinochi bahadoch." So the pasuk says, "Do not go ahead and take. Don't take interest." Right? Why? So the Gemara says, V'chayachicha imach. The pasuk says, let your brother live with you. In other words, don't take interest so that you allow someone else to live normally. If you take interest is very difficult. A person has to then pay back more than they borrowed. So don't take interest from someone. V'chayachicha imach. Allow your brother to live alongside you. So in other words, the Gemara says, Ahadrele, and if you did take interest, we infer from that, give it back to your brother so that he has the ability to live alongside you. The mitzvah of returning interest money only applies to who? The lender. It applies to the lender. It doesn't apply to anyone else. The way the pasuk is framed, is that halacha l'maisa, the obligation of hashava, of return, only applies to the person who took the interest, doesn't apply to the heirs or anyone else who would acquire the money. Very interesting. So the Gemara said, so the one who went ahead and applied Rami Bar Chama to this last Braisa was certainly applied to the Mishnah. The Gemara says, Aval, Aval, Braisa, Rami Bar Chama, Kirav Masnile. But the one who applied it to the Mishnah wouldn't necessarily apply to the Braisa because Rami Bar Chama holds like Rava. Okay. So we have a number of open items over here. Right, just in general, we're still stuck with the normal open. We're not stuck with anything. We're privileged, right, to work through this. So I would say, so on one hand, which really what the tension over here is trying to figure out what is the nature of inheritance. Is inheritance considered to be like a brand new domain? Right, assuming that inheritance is accompanied by yeush. So therefore, again, the yarshim really have no particular obligations towards anything to do with their father, so returning lost object or anything else, or no, Yerushim are considered to be an extension, ultimately, again, of their father, and therefore, whatever outstanding items their father had going on, they would be obligated to go ahead and satisfy those as well, specifically in the realm of debt. And I would say, there is an interesting yisod that you see from here, that when parents don't resolve their issues, they tend to trickle down to their children. I would say, so I just want to point out, whatever the bottom line is over here, there's a tension. There's a tension. You know, we think that our personal issues, whatever I'm struggling with as an individual, I can kind of shield my kids from it. Like, my stuff is my stuff. But it's not true. You know, it's just like when there's tension in a marriage, even when parents try to hide it from children, children always pick up on it. They always know when there is dysfunction, when there is strife, and when there is difficulty. Even if you choose not to argue in front of the kids, they feel it, because marital tension is palpable within a home. It's the same thing. The connection between parents and children, I both say, is something that transcends biology. There's a connection of neshamas. There's a connection of everything. So when a parent is walking around with unresolved stuff, and a parent is not working on themselves, right, and I'm not bettering myself, and that stuff is churning inside of me, my child knows it. My child knows it. And not only that, but Rahman al-Aslan, sometimes that unresolved stuff passes down to my children. Because if my kid is brought up in a home with unresolved stuff, and my kid is brought up in a home with inconsistencies, and my kid is brought up in a home where at the end of the day, I as a parent am not working on myself, then whatever that unresolved schmutz may be, it goes ahead and it trickles down. I will say, that's what Chazal is teaching us over here. Reuven is a thief, and Reuven died. And I will say, Reuven died without ever getting his act together. And you know what happens when you die without getting your act together? Your kids are left holding the bag. And it's not just in a material sense. It's in an emotional, spiritual sense as well. We think that sometimes our obligation as parents is just to merit Hashem, you know, provide a home and shelter and education and clothing and all that stuff. And that's all true. The most important thing we give to our children is a worked out self. The better you are as a person, that is the greatest Yerusha and lifetime gift that you give to your child. Conversely, unresolved stuff has such detrimental effects upon our children in ways that often we can never even realize. Such an incredible yisod. The Gemara says as follows: Tana Rabbanon, Agozel Umachilas Banov Peturim Lashali. So we'll see, listen to this. So a person goes ahead and steals. Reuven steals, and Ma'achilas Banov, as we said before, means it's used up. Right? Again, I will say, the fact that it was used on his kids doesn't really matter all that much, right? If Reuven stole it, whether he used it to feed his kids or he gambled it away, whatever it is, it doesn't really make a difference. The point over here is, at the end of the day, when he dies, there is nothing left. So I'll say, so this is it. Reuven the thief didn't work out his stuff before he dies. What happens when you don't work out your stuff before you die? Your kids are left with it. So what happens? Peturim l'shalim. So the kids have no obligation of returning the lost object. No obligation. Hiniach lifnehem. So we'll say, now what happens if he dies? And he left the object. So we'll say, let's see, just argue and see. He stole a sheep. And what happens? He dies, and the sheep is there. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Gedolim chayav l'shalim. If the kids are adults, now this is another twist in the conversation over here. We haven't seen this before. If the kids are adults, chayav l'shalim. Ultimately, they are obligated to go ahead and pay it back. Kitanim, peturim l'shalim. But if they're minors, they do not have an obligation to repay. Vim amru gidolim, ein anu yodim cheshbona shechashvu avinu imcha. Peturim. But even if they're adult kids, and they say to the claimant, right, the victim, Shimon comes along and says, hey, that's my sheep, right? And the adult children say, you know what, Shimon, you seem like a very nice guy, but the truth is, we have no knowledge of our father's affairs. Right? We have no knowledge of what he did, what he didn't do, what he stole, what he didn't steal. And as such, you know, again, we're not saying that what you're saying is not true, but we also can't what? We also can't say that what you're saying is true. In that case, peturin, they would be exempt from repaying. So we'll say, so watch what just happened over here. So this entire conversation took a dramatic and overwhelming turn. So remember again, same case, Reuven the thief, stole. Let's saw again. Case number one of us, which is always the simplest case, which almost everyone seems to agree with, which is what? Reuven stole the object, consumed the object, now died. What's the obligation of the children? Obligation of the children? Nothing. Except one possibility. Again, what's the wrinkle in that? Not the wrinkle. What's the except? If Reuven left behind real property, and he owned real property at the time of the theft, then there could be an encumbrance on the real property for the theft. So that's that piece. But let's kind of push that on the side a little bit for now, right? So no stolen item in existence. Children have no obligation to return the object. Okay, case two, the object that he stole is still in existence. I'm going to say, so now this new brisa as in a new dimension. It depends. What does it depend on? The age of the Yarshin. If they're Kitanim, no. You can't collect anything from Kitanim. There's nothing to talk about. If they're Gedolim, they'd have an obligation to go ahead and repay. However, if they say, listen, we have no knowledge of our father's estate. We're not disputing what you said, but we can neither, we can neither confirm nor deny. Right? So then in that case, they're pater from paying. So Gemara says, I don't stand. Mishum de amri ein anu yodim peturin? I don't stand. So that's it. That's all they need to do to exempt themselves. They can just say, I don't know. Right? I don't know. That's it. I don't know is suddenly a defense, and I don't know is suddenly enough to say they don't have to pay. That doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi, none of those means to say, Hachi achamar, kidom sha'amru yodim anu cheshbon shechashav v'inumcha, v'lo pash l'cha gabe v'lo midi. No. Rabbi says, what's the case? The case is where Shimon comes along and says, hey, guys, I'm sorry to tell you this. Your father was a thief, right? I'm sure he had many good qualities as well, but he was a thief, and that's my sheep, right? And the children say, listen, we are well-versed in the estate of our father, and he never stole anything from you. They make a certain claim that the item was not stolen. So, Pturin, their putter ultimately again from repaying anything. Now, I will say the truth is it's really not such a chiddush, because really, what is this? This is a case of hamotzi mechaver alav araya. Like, in other words, it's fine. Shimon's showing up, but Shimon's saying it's stolen. You can say whatever you want, right? But lamaisa, if the kids say it's not stolen, so that's it. It's what we call yadam al ha'elyona. They have the upper hand. Why? Because they're muchza, because they're holding on to the property. Okay, tanya idach, another raisa. Hagoz alu ma'achil. We'll say Reuven steals and uses up the object. So banab term in the shalim. Then ultimately his children have no obligation of restitution. So now we'll say case two. Reuven stole the sheep. He died and he left the sheep in front of them, right? He left the sheep in existence. Hiniach lifneihem va'achlum. And then the children consumed it. Right, the children consumed it. Bein gidolim, bein gitanu chayavim. Whether they are adults or minors, they have an obligation to go ahead and give it back. Okay, interesting. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. First of all, look at. So they have an obligation to give it back. So the Gemara says, kitanim min chayvi. I don't understand. Kitanim, right? If the yarshim are minors, they'd have an obligation to return the object. Lo yehe ela da azik azuki. They should be no worse than a katan who does damages. They both say, what's the halacha of a katan who damages? What's the halacha? Potter. Right? Potter. Why? Why? Because Lamaisa says, again, a katan doesn't have any liability. So I don't understand why would the kitanim be chayiv for going in and consuming the stolen object? Amra papa hakamar, this is what it means to say. Hiniach lifneim v'adayin lo achlum. Watch this. Rapapa says like this. If Reuven died, and the stolen object was extant. In other words, the children did not yet consume it. So, bein gidolim, bein gitanim chayavim. So we'll say, okay, that's a little bit easier to swallow. Meaning, at the end of the day, if the stolen object is in existence, whether the heirs are adults or minors, there's an obligation for them to give it back to the owner. So the Gemara says, chayavim, that's talocha. So we'll say, now again, if the object is not in existence, then again, ultimately, no one is obligated to go in and give it back. Amar Rava, hiniach lemaviyim parashula. So we'll say another interesting case over here. So we'll say, so we just have to point out, we have to tie this up, right? Because there's a lot of stuff happening over here, but we are not yet at the end of the sugya. Now again, the one piece that does seem to feel that everybody is pretty much rallying around is that if Reuven stole the object and consumed the object during his lifetime, then there is absolutely no obligation upon the children to pay back anything. Again, we only have that real property thing which we'll have to deal with, okay? And again, if he went ahead and he left it behind, if the object is extant, it seems to be that the majority opinion is that what? Give it back. If the stolen object is still in existence, give that stolen object back. Ultimately, again, it seems to be the machlokes cases would be a case where the heirs themselves consumed the stolen object, or maybe there's a distinction between adult heirs versus minor heirs. Okay, so if you're confused, that just means you're paying attention, right? So if you're confused, you're following the Gemara perfectly, because we have a whole variety of opinions over here. But again, we'll say, here's the good news. anytime you're confused in life, know that if you hold on long enough, clarity will come. Clarity will come. In life, it could often take years. In the daf, Emirat Hashem, it's going to be by tomorrow the latest. So that's the good news. Says the Gemara. Let's go. Amar Rava. Hiniach HaMaviyam Parashu'ula. Now, this is a great case. They're all great cases. It's fascinating. Well, so I just want to point out each of these cases, you could delve into it so fascinatingly, but okay, we'll have to do it a little superficially. So, Rava says, Hiniach HaMaviyam Parashu'ula. Listen to this. Reuven borrowed a cow from Shimon. Okay? Now we'll say what happens. Reuven died during the duration of this borrowing. So he borrowed it for a year, and he died in the middle. So we'll say, what's that halacha? So the Gemara says, Mishtamshin ba kol yimei she'elasa. So the children have the ability to go ahead and utilize it all of the remaining days of the borrowing duration. On the other hand, so we'll say, Mesa ein chaybosa. Now we'll say, now normally a borrower is called a shoel. Right? Shoel has a heightened level of responsibility. Remember again, we'll say, in halacha, responsibility is directly related to the amount of usage you have. So since a shoel, a borrower, has essentially full usage over the animal, therefore again, he has extreme responsibility. So for example, a shoel is chayiv even if the animal dies, even not through negligence, the animal just dropped dead, right? Just died. So normally a shoel is obligated for that. Shoel is also chayiv even for onsen, even for extenuating circumstances. Now here's what's interesting. On one hand, we say that if the father dies, the children are permitted to go ahead and use it. Yet on the other hand, mesa in chayiv bonsev, the animal dies, the children are not chayiv for any onsen, not chayiv for any extenuating circumstances. Now what's the logic of that? I will say. So on one hand, the logic seems to be, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Ein chai bon sed lo kiblu alai nitirusa. So on one hand, the halacha gives them the right to use it as an extension of their father, but yet does not vest them with the responsibility of their father because they never accepted that heightened level of responsibility upon themselves. Isn't that interesting? So they can use it, but they don't have the same level of responsibility. Kisurim shalaviemu, the tavcha v'achlua. What happens if they didn't realize that the cow was a borrowed cow? Instead, what do they think? They thought it was their father's cow. So what do they do? They shechted it. And they ate it. So what's talach? Rabbi says, so and again, now remember, if this is a case of theft, if you treat it like theft, then what are they going to be chayiv? Arba the chamisha. So Gemara says, no. Rather, again, it will say, obviously, they thought it was their father. So therefore, what's talacha? Mishalman d'mei basar bazal. They have to pay back the owner, but they only pay back the value of meat when meat is cheap. Right? The cheapest value of meat. Okay. Hiniach l'mavien achrayis nechosim. However, what happens if the father left behind real property? Then chayav and mishalman. Then it they are obligated to go ahead and pay back the value of the stolen object. Now, both say, now, the question is, what do we do with that statement? So some append or attach that last statement to the first part over here. And some append it ultimately again to the seifa. Man de masnila areisha kol shekena seifa. The one who applies it to the reisha will certainly apply it to the seifa. Upliga derat papa. And this would argue on our papa. Man de masnila seifa aval areisha lo. But the one who goes ahead and depends it to the seifa would not apply to the reisha. Vahainu derat papa. And this reflects the view of Rav Papa. Now, what does Rav Papa say? Here we go. Dom Rav Papa. Haisa para ginuvalo v'tavcha b'shabbos. Okay. It's like too much for one day. Incredible. Listen to this. So let's say, watch this. Rav Papa said like this. Reuven stole a cow. All right? Now let's say, now watch this. Haisa para ginuvalo v'tavcha b'shabbos. So let's say again, he stole it on Friday. Right? He stole it on Friday. Right, because again, Reuven doesn't want to steal on Shabbos because again, he's from. I just want to say so again. He steals on Friday. I will say, by the way, you see this all the time. Everybody's got their inconsistencies, so there is such a thing as a Shomer Shabbos thief, right? There are, right, because again, we all have our areas where we're great and our areas where we're just living on the wrong side of the law. Such is the nature. Such is human nature. So I said, para gnuvalo. So Reuven stole the cow on Erev Shabbos. So already on Erev Shabbos on Friday, the object was stolen. V'tavcha b'Shabbos, and he slaughtered it on Shabbos. Now we'll say, so what's the halacha? Chayiv shekvar chayiv b'gneva kodim shiyavo lidei esur Shabbos. We'll say, so in this case over here, he's going to be chayiv both arba v'chamisha, as well as as well as a death penalty for going ahead and violating Shabbos. So we'll see. Now remember, we normally have a concept that what? Kimli bedrabimine. That when you go ahead and you commit a crime that results in two liabilities, one a capital punishment and one financial liability, capital liability sets aside financial liability. However, that is only if there is a simultaneity. If the two obligations devolve upon a person at two different times, then one is chayv both. So we'll say now, watch this. Watch what's happening over here. Take a quick look at Rashi. Rashi is in the wide lines, four lines into the wide lines. So if he stole on Erev Shabbos and he slaughtered on Shabbos, chayif af pitashlumin arba v'chamisha. Now listen, now watch this. Hear this out. Rui is going to be chayif, both capital liability, death penalty for violating Shabbos, and the 4 and 5 time penalty for stealing and slaughtering. Now listen, now remember, why, but yet he didn't slaughter until Shabbos. What's going on over here? Nischayu bekeren kodesh shavu lidei iser skila. The afagav de knasa lo osya le ad Shabbos lo patrina le knasa mishum chiv misa. Don't really believe this. Watch this. This is so exciting. Watch this. He'll say, another interesting fact. This goes in the notebook. Another interesting fact. The concept of kimle bedrabimine only applies to misa and mamon, to a death penalty and monetary obligation. It does not apply to Misa and Knas. In other words, you could be chayiv a Knas, a penalty payment, and Misa at the same time. Okay? So let me give you an example of this. So let's say if a person were to go ahead and perform an act that would result in capital liability and a mammon liability at the same time, you'd be chayiv for the death penalty, pater from mammon. On the other hand, I would say, in this case over here, what's happening? Reuven stole the object on Erev Shabbos, right? So he's already a ganav. On Shabbos, he slaughters it. And I will say, in the act of slaughtering, two things happen. Number one, chil Shabbos, he's violating Shabbos. And number two, what's the second thing? Arba v'chamisha, 4 and 5. 4 and 5 is a penalty payment. It's a knas, it's not mamon. So because it's knas, you could incur it at the same time as capital liability. Wow. So Reuven is chayiv. Reuven is going to be chayiv both the death penalty for violating Shabbos and the arba v'chamisha knas penalty as well. We'll say, by the way, you look at some of these, you're like, that avera is just not worth it, right? If you're going to go down, right? Lemay say, come on, make it worth it. A steak, I don't know if that's worth it at the end of the day. So we're going to go Zaitar. Watch this. However, let's say, we'll say second case. Second case was, the Reuven was borrowing the cow. It was borrowing it. The tabcha b'Shabbos. So I will say now on Shabbos he slaughtered it. Then potter. I will say he's going to be potter. And I will say why? What's the difference between the previous case and this case? In this case, I will say the act of theft and slaughter occur at the same time. Because remember, again, the power was in his domain because it was borrowed, so it had every right to be there. On Shabbos, when he slaughters it, that's when he becomes a thief. So in the moment he becomes a thief, he also incurs capital liability. So that's mamon. Remember, that's going to be his chayiv kera now. His chayiv mamon. And Misa at the same time. So you only chayiv the capital liability sets aside financial liability. Incredible. So Marsa Pater, She Isr Shabbos Ve Isr Gneva Bainke Echad. Incredible. Bose, that's right, Papa. Tan Rabbanon. Okay, good. Let's go later. Gets better. Tan Rabbanon Ve Heshav Zagzeel Shar Gazel. Bose, so the Pasuk says, if you steal something, you're obligated to return the stolen object you stole. Ma Tamu Lomar Shar Gazel. Why does it have to say you have to return the stolen object that you stole? Let's say it's obvious. What else are you returning? In other words, why do I need that phrase, those two words, asher gazel? Just say, teheshev asagzila, return the stolen object. Why do you have to say, return the stolen object that you stole, to which the Gemara says, yachzer be'en shegazel. Kein shegazel. We'll say it means you have to return the stolen object in the same state that you stole it. In other words, you have to return the stolen object when? When the object itself is extant, when it's in existence. Look at Rashi, we'll say, three lines up from the bottom, Kilomar, Im gzele kayemes yachzir, aval in gzele kayemes potter. Interesting. What it seems to be telling us is, if the stolen object is in existence, you have an obligation to return it. If the stolen object is not in existence, you don't have an obligation to return it. What does this mean? Here it is. Mikan amru, hagozel umach yiles banov, Peturim Mila Shale. So we'll say this teaches us that what? That halacha lemaisa. If Reuven stole an object and it was consumed and now he died, the children have no obligation to return the object. Why not? To return stolen property. Why not? Why not? It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. On the other hand, hiniach lifneihem. On the other hand, if Reuven stole the object and he died and the object is right there, the stolen object is still extant, then what? The children have an obligation to return it. So I will say, we're circling back to our original sugya. So again, if the stolen object doesn't exist because it was consumed, no obligation to return, no obligation upon the Yershim to return. However, if the stolen object is still in existence, there's absolutely an obligation to go ahead and return it. Sumchas, Mishum Sumchas Amru, so I will say Sumchas said, Gidolim, Chayovin, Pekitanim, Peturim. Okay, so Sumchas comes on about saying, Sumchas wants to make this distinction between the age of the heirs. And he wants to say, if the heirs are Kitanim will say, in general, have just no financial obligations vis-a-vis the estate of their father. So if it's Kitanim, even if the stolen object is in existence, the Kitanim do not have an obligation to return it. Conversely, if they're Gidolim and the stolen object is in existence, they most certainly have an obligation to go ahead and return it. Okay, here we go. So I want to say, watch this story. Great, great story. Bar Chamud Rabbi Yirmiya Tarak. Gali Biapei Rabbi Yirmiya. So we'll say, so what happened? So give you the background. Rabbi Yirmiya's father-in-law died. So we'll say, Rabbi Yirmiya was now coming along to go ahead and take possession of his father-in-law's house. Okay? Now, first of all, he waited till he died. That's number one. I just want to point that out. All right? So now understand what's happening over here. We're going to see Rabbi Yirmiya was claiming that his father-in-law had conveyed ownership to the house to him during his lifetime. Okay? We're going to see in just a moment. But watch what's happening over here. So Rabbi Yirmiya shows up at the house and his brother-in-law, Bar Chamua, the son of his father-in-law, so Rabbi Yirmiya's brother-in-law, Tarak Gali Biape, slammed the door in his face. Right? Slammed the open door in his face, meaning would not let, he understood, Rabbi Yirmiya wasn't coming to say hello. He was coming to take possession of the house. The brother-in-law closed the door in his face so as not to allow Rabbi Yirmiya in the house to prevent him from going ahead and taking possession of the house. Okay? Aslaka made Rabbi Abin. So Rabbi Yirmiya comes before Rabbi Abin. Amar Shaluhu Tovea. So again, Rabbi Abin says, Rabbi Yirmiya, I don't understand. Your brother-in-law is the heir. He's the son of your father-in-law. So yeah, he's closing the door in your face because he feels that the house is his. And he's claiming his Yerusha. Amar Le, Rabbi Yirmiya says, Vaha, Maisina Sahadi Da'achseke Bei B'chaye Davua. But I have witnesses. That I made a chazaka, ultimately again, on this home during my father's life, during my father-in-law's lifetime. So Rashi points out to Rabbi Yirmiya was either claiming that either his father-in-law had sold him the house or had given him the house as a gift. Right? Either again, I will say, so Rabbi Yirmiya is saying, okay, I got it. I understand what my brother-in-law is doing, but I have witnesses that at the end of the day, my father-in-law conveyed ownership of this house to me, and I did a chazaka during my father-in-law's lifetime. So Amalei, so Rabbi Abin says back, V'chi mekablen edim amud beis, shelo bifnei baldin. I will say, but in general, you can't go ahead and receive testimony not in the presence of the litigant. Now we're going to get into this, okay, it's another sugya we're doing today. So again, this idea that when you're adjudicating a case, the parties have to be present. And you can't adjudicate a case without the involved parties present. Here's the problem I will say. The brother-in-law, another wrinkle in this, the brother-in-law was a katan. A katan essentially is like a non-present party. Rabbi Yaakov said to Rabbi Yirmiya, you're stuck. Because the truth is, your brother-in-law is a party to this litigation or to this issue. And because he's a katan, it's as if he's not here. And because he's not here, you can't litigate with him. So the truth is, you're probably going to have to wait until it becomes a gadol to try to work this through. You know what I'm saying? I just want to point out, Rabbi Yirmiya has witnesses. I'll just also point out, that you see how interesting it is that, you know, financial disputes in the aftermath of death, right, are common. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Which, and again, another good Musar HaSkil, which is make sure you have a will and make sure you have an estate plan and make sure that your children know exactly what your future plans are. People don't like talking about these things. You know, they don't like taking care of burial plots, or they don't like taking care of estates. I would say it's so important. We don't know how long we have in this world. And it's so important to have these kinds of affairs worked out. It's the best thing, one, just like when you're, right? Just like every single parent wants there to be shalom between their children. You want there to be shalom between your children even when you're not here as well. So if you have assets, it's so important that you indicate to your children and you have a document that indicates how you want those assets dispersed. Leads to so much more shalom. It doesn't mean that everybody's happy with what they get, right? But at least lemaisa, there's no argument between what everybody is getting in any event. So the point over here, sorry, Abba's Rabbi Yirmiyah, you're stuck. You're stuck because your brother-in-law is claiming that he's the heir, he's a katan, and you can't adjudicate a case without all the parties present. So Gemara says, "Velo, you can't adjudicate the case without all the parties present." V'ha katani, being gedolim, being katanim, chayavim. I will say, but yet again, what did we just learn? What did we just say right before? We just said before that if Reuven the thief leaves behind the stolen object and that object is extant, then what? The Yerushim are obligated to give it back, even if what? Even if what? Okay. Even if they're Kitanim. So you see from here that we do litigate with Kitanim. To which the Gemara says, Amar Lei, Hare Machlokes, Sumchus B'tzidach. Okay, but I will say, but remember again, there's Sumchus. And what does Sumchus say? Sumchus said we only go ahead and take stolen property from Gidolim and not Kitanim. So you see, Simchas holds that we don't involve Kitanim in litigation. So Amar, Ichbal Kuli Alma Bakai Kisimchas Lafkom Midridi. So what Rabbi Yirmiyah says, so suddenly everybody agrees with Simchas, right, in order to kind of stack the deck against me. So again, this Simchas is the one person who says that we don't remove stolen property from Kitanim. What about everyone else who says we do? So again, Simchas would say, I'm making a claim that it's my property. My brother-in-law is holding it illegally. We should be able to litigate this out. Adahachi, let's listen to this. Adahachi agalgal milsa. So I'll say, as all of this is going on, the matter continued to escalate. Asa umata lekamed Rabbi Yavo. So I'll say, so the case came before Rabbi Yavo. So Rabbi Yavo heard about the Gemara Rabbi Yirmiyah and his minor brother-in-law. Amr, lo shmiya lechu had Rabbi Yosei bar Chama. Did you not hear about what Rabbi Yosei bar Chama said? What did Rabbi Yosei bar Chama say? Amr Rabbi Yosei. Amr Rabbi Yosei bar Chama. Rabbi Yosei, tino shetakaf ba'avadav. V'yarad l'soch sedei shel chavero. V'amr shalihu. So I'll say, what happens in the following case? You have a tinok. I will say, in this case, tinok is a pretty precocious tinok. Right? So again, it means a minor. You have a minor who took avadim. I will say, now, there's two lashonos, and I should go with the first one. He took his own servants, right? Those avadim that belonged to him, belonged to his father. He goes into the field of someone else. And he claims, this field is mine. I will say, now, why does he bring the avadim with him? And remember, one of the ways you acquire a field is how? Chazaka, right? One of the ways you can perform chazaka, proprietary act, is working the field. So the tinok brings his avadim with him into Shimon's field, has the avadim work the field, and say, oh, field belongs to me. Field belongs to me. So what's the halacha? Ein omrim namtin ad sheyagdil. I will say, so now, again, now, the katan, if he's smart, he can say like this, you know, you can't litigate with a katan. Can't litigate with the katan. So I would say, if our hands are tied, then what would end up happening essentially is we'd have to kind of, he'd hold on to the field until he's a gadol, then I'll bring him to base. And the Gemara says, no, we don't do that. We don't say, ein omrim namtin ad sheyagdil. We don't say, let's wait until he grows up and then we'll litigate with him. Ella, motzin miyado miyad. Rather, you know what we do? We say, listen, katan, right? Get out of here, right? We take the field from him right now. And then ultimately, sheyagdil yovi edivinira. And again, when he gets older, if he wants to go ahead and bring witnesses and litigate this out, then fine. Rabbi say, what do you see from here? What you see from here is that we do not give the statements of a katan legal standing. So therefore, again, the katan says, it's my field. You say, that's very nice, very cute, right? Get out of here. We give it back. We allow the field to remain with the established owner. And we say, katan, when you grow up, when you become a gadol, right after your bar mitzvah shekel, you could come back to Beis Din and you could go ahead and you could claim. And if you have witnesses, and we could adjudicate this out. But while you're a katan, we're not doing this. I will say, so also an interesting, we don't have time. Okay, so just an interesting chinuch yisod in this as well, but we'll have to save it for a different time. So I will say, so the idea over here is we see that we don't wait until the katan becomes a gadol to go ahead and adjudicate stuff out. But rather, again, we take the property. So in the case of Rabbi Yirmiyah, why not? We should say, take the house, because Rabbi Yirmiyah has Eidim. And if when the brother-in-law becomes a gadol, he feels that the house is his, let him come to Beis Din. So he says, you can't compare that. Me dummy. Hasam hu demafkinan minei delo kaim alei acheskas avua. Aval hacha hecha de islei chazaka davua lo. Bosei, it's not fair to compare the cases. I'll tell you why. In this case, Bosei, remember again, Rabbi Yirmiyah's brother-in-law is the presumed heir. This is an important distinction over here. As much as Rabbi Yirmiyah has witnesses, but remember, I will say, this brother-in-law is the son of his deceased father-in-law. So the way the halachos of Yerusha work is property goes from a father to the son. So I will say, that's a pretty strong legal standing over there. So you're right. Normally, what we would say to a katan, if a katan is making a claim, we say, get out of here. You're a katan. And when you get older, you could come back and we could adjudicate this out. Otherwise, we're leaving it in the ownership of the person we know. But this case is different because the katan is claiming Yerusha. And again, I will say that's a pretty strong claim. So as such, this is an adjudicable case. So we're going to Amravashi, Amravshapsi, Mekablin Eidin Shalob of Nebalda. So we'll say, now remember again, this whole thing happened, right? So you have Rabbi Yirmiyah making the claim that the house is his. Brother-in-law making the claim that the house is his. Everybody making their own claims. So I will say, so now interestingly enough, based on this, the Gemara wanted to say, remember the first person Rabbi Yirmiyah went to was Rabbi Avin. And Rabbi Avin said, you don't really have recourse. Why not? Because at the end of the day, he's a katan. And a katan, it's as if he's not present. And you can't adjudicate a case not in the presence of the litigants. So the Gemara says, Reb Shapsi, Mekablin Eidim Shol Bifnei Baal. Reb Shapsi disagrees with this, and he says, no, you can't accept testimony, even not in the presence of the litigants, even not in the presence of one of the Baalei Din. So Tera Reb Yochanan, Vichi Mekablin Eidim Shol Bifnei Baal Din. Really? You could accept testimony, you could adjudicate a case, even not in the presence of a litigant? So the Gemara says, Kibla Minei Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina. Kigon shahaya hu chola o eidav cholin. You could, but I will say maybe in a particular extenuating circumstance, like where somebody was sick. Let's say there's a case that needs to be adjudicated, and let's say again a baal din, one of the litigants was unable to come, or the witnesses were unable to come. Oh, shayu eidav mevakshin leilich lemedina sayam b'shol chulo v'lo ba. Or I will say, or for that matter, again, you have witnesses. The witnesses ultimately need to go overseas. So he called the litigants, said, guys, you need to come now in order to get testimony. And let's say, again, one of the litigants wouldn't show up. So we'll say, in those kind of cases where there's more of an extenuating urgency, we will receive testimony even without the presence of all the litigants. Let's say, interesting, halacha. You could receive testimony even not in the presence of the litigants. Armar Ukva. I heard an explanation of Shmuel's statement. Kigon, the paschu le bedina. That's a case ultimately where they already began the adjudication process. If they began the case, and then for whatever reason one of the litigants was not there, you could continue forward with the case. Shalchu le velo asa. And ultimately, again, it's a case where Beis Din accepted the case, so to speak. They began the process. They dispatched for litigants to show up. And litigant didn't show up. Avalo paschale bedina. But if Beis Din did not yet begin to adjudicate the case, then the Gemara says, I'm sorry. Avalo paschale bedina. Masi amarle anale Beis Din agadol azona. So this is interesting. If the local Beis Din did not yet begin to adjudicate the case, they summon a litigant. And litigant says, I'm not coming to you. I'm going to the high court. Right? Go big or go home. Right? I'm going to the high court in Jerusalem. Then ultimately he has a right to do that. Ihachi ki paschuli nami masi amrale le Beis Din agadol azona. But if that's the case, again, even if the Beis Din began to adjudicate the case, why can't one of the litigants say, I choose to go to the high court in Jerusalem? To which the Gemara says, Amravina, kigon denakit diska mi Beis Din agadol. The case we're talking about over here is talking about a situation where, again, the litigant has like a tzetel. He has, you know, a piece of a document from the Beis Din agadol, and Beis Din agadol telling the local court to adjudicate this case. So we'll have to stop over here for today. We'll pick up another day. So again, we still have many open ends from our previous sugya. Now we launched into this new discussion about the ability of Beis Din to adjudicate a case, even not in the presence of the litigants. Emir Tasha Osai, to be continued tomorrow. Shkoyach.